So this is the seventh Sunday in 4 years that I've had the pleasure of being a guest teacher here. And as I reflected on it, I thought, this is one of the most aspirational, maybe inspirational, I hope, but definitely aspirational talks that I will have given. Because I feel like I have a long way to go when it comes into living into what I'm about to share. And this was really obvious to me yesterday when Andy and I were taking a walk on that beautiful harbinger of spring day, and I was telling him about an article that I had read about a conspiracy-loving gentleman who just won a spot on the ballot for a Senate seat in Kent County. And I'm not going to repeat what I said about this gentleman or his constituents in his Trump-supporting district. But as soon as I said what I said, I followed it with, well, that's about as opposite of the spirit that I'm going to share tomorrow morning as I can get. And when I thought about that disconnect between my actions in that moment, and if I'm totally honest, and I think I'm not alone in this, probably my actions over the past 6 years, especially when I'm alone in my car and listening to the radio and feeling outraged and feel safe, when I think about the disconnect between my actions and the words that I put together for today, I realized that I needed to open this teaching with an admission that I often contradict myself. After all, I am large. I contain multitudes. I try my best to practice what I teach, but it's not easy, and I fail more than I'd like. And as I thought about this, it brought to mind that saying, those who can't do, teach. And I thought, is that true here? But I figure if I say it enough and I really mean it, which I do, that it will help with the doing. And that by sharing these aspirations with you, my hope is that we can help each other live into them. I've spent the last 13 years asking questions for a living. For as far as I can remember, the words that made me happiest to hear from someone were, that's a great question, followed by, no one's ever asked me that before. Something in my brain just lights up and it does a happy dance. And so finding that profession of coaching that was centered on asking good questions was really a lifesaver and a natural fit. But just because I've made a living from curiosity doesn't mean that I'm always able to practice it in all areas of my life. See the beginning of what I was sharing a few minutes ago. This is especially true when I consider how we as a C3 community define our value of open inquiry, which is this is the first Sunday of the month that we are exploring that particular value of this community. And we define open inquiry as we pursue the free exchange of ideas, explore the lessons of science, philosophy, and the creative arts, and undertake independent spiritual journeys. The value of open inquiry is probably the most challenging one we embrace, which makes it arguably the most important. And you know, I love pre-talk. If you haven't come to pre-talk, I encourage you, just set that alarm a little bit earlier and come join us, because we have these rich conversations that where we do embrace open inquiry. I would say that's what that space is all about. And one of the things that was mentioned when we talked about it, I raised the question of what do you find most challenging about our value of open inquiry? And numerous things came up that I'm going to weave into what I'm about to share with you, but the point was made, and I think they were speaking we as individuals, but I think sometimes even we as a community, we have an easier time of embracing that idea of open inquiry when we're talking about people's spiritual journeys, less of an easy time when we're talking about politics. So something to think about. And as Sandy Kate shared, I've been a member here for 4 years, and I see us succeed and struggle with living into that value. And there are lots of reasons, and some of them came up this morning. When I ask, what do you find most challenging about this? Tribalism. Labeling things, you know, our tendency to want to label things good, bad, right or wrong. You know, seeing the uptick in authoritarianism and those tendencies, which basically say, there's nothing to discuss here. You must always agree with whatever the dominant narrative is. I believe it was Rod that brought up when Michael DeWild came a few months ago, I think it was, and talked about what was happening at the university and how even their open inquiry was being stifled, where you had to be careful of what you were saying in front of the classroom for fear of either offending or activating somebody, or even maybe even losing your job. So it's vital that we really learn how to sit in open inquiry. And I'm increasingly convinced that that particular value, because it's so important, is really at the core of what makes C3 special, our purpose for being. And by special, I don't mean superior. It's just the way that we march to the beat of a different drummer, how we're set apart, and you might even say how we are sacred. So it's a good thing that we have an entire month to unpack open inquiry, since it's the value of a lifetime. I want to talk about inquiry not as something that we do, but as a state of being, a mindset. The question that comes to my heart and mind as I reflect on this is, what is asked of us if we are to live fully into that value of open inquiry? How do we prepare ourselves to be sincerely and genuinely open to a free exchange of ideas and an unpredictable spiritual journey? And as I tend to do, I take some notes, and a few things popped up for me that contribute to what I would call a mindset of open inquiry. And those include mystery, grace, humility, unattachment, receptivity, and reciprocity. And I'm going to talk about each one of those. So let's start with that willingness to embrace mystery. Open inquiry, in my mind, means that the questions are more important than the answers. Mystery is defined as something not understood or beyond understanding. You might say, well, if we can't understand it, then why do we even bother asking about it? Why bother being curious? We bother because while we might not fully understand or explain, be able to explain something, we can still wonder about it and treat it as a reminder that even things that we think should have an answer won't always have one. Just as important as treating yourself, let me say that again, just as important is treating yourself and everyone else with grace. I think grace is my favorite concept. I don't have any tattoos, but if I were to get one, I think I would have grace put somewhere on my person. It's my favorite state of being that sums up so many powerful elements that contribute to an open inquiry mindset. But as we heard from Anne Lamott, we have to be open to letting that grace work on us so that it leaves us someplace different than where it found us. And so to have a mindset of grace means to feel gratitude, compassion, forgiveness, patience, and generosity. Think about how much that contributes to being able to be open to new ideas and possibilities. We're asked to feel gratitude, to live in a country where the free exchange of ideas is encouraged, technically, honored, and we hope protected, even when those ideas might be ones that we don't agree with. We're called to hold ourselves and one another with compassion, knowing that no one is perfect and that confusion and doubt are part of the territory of open inquiry and that we don't have to have all the answers. Another point that came up in pre-talk was that we can practice this. We can practice this compassion one person at a time because otherwise it's too big. And then we're invited to express forgiveness, which means that we care more about the relationship than we care about being right. Even when we're feeling anxious, we're also asked to practice patience. Patience is how we lean into that liminal space that we've talked a lot about here at C3. It means that we slow down, we take a deep breath, and we choose to be okay with not knowing, trusting that all will be revealed if we wait just a little bit longer. It's also asking us to be patient with nuance and complexity. We want to take a shortcut and put a label on something or put it in a box and define it. And we have to resist that temptation to go for the simple answer. And then generosity. Grace is all about being generous with our time, our energy, our willingness to help, and our listening. And I'm sorry to say, though, that generosity does not mean being generous with our opinions or our advice. And then there's the trait that comes so naturally to everyone, humility. This is the hardest one for me, and I suspect I'm not alone in that. Andy and I will often notice when one or both of us will go on a tear about something, and we take down the other side, whatever or whoever it happens to be. And as we notice that we're doing this, we will declare, "Isn't righteous anger fun?" I can be so damn sure of things that I know. It can be hard for me to imagine how anyone could think differently about certain things, like about the fact that we should be taking care of our planet and everything on it, that we should respect the dignity of every human being, no matter the color of their skin, what country they were born into, who they love, what box they check or don't check when they're filling out a form about their gender, that it doesn't matter who or what you worship, or if you worship anything or anyone at all, that what matters most is that you're kind and honest and you make yourself useful. Think about what you know for sure. What do you know to be true, no matter what anyone else tells you? Now, take that and consider that you might be wrong. I know. Gasp. Or at least that there's more than one way of thinking about it. And that awareness, that willingness to ask that question, is the start of humility. And there are other ways to cultivate humility. One path is by releasing attachment to being right, to having the answer instead of one answer of many. Another way is to practice silence, another topic that we've spent some time exploring here at C3. Not every statement or question requires a response. And even if it begs for a response, it doesn't have to be given right away. This is one of the most powerful tools that I use in my coaching and mediation. I do a lot of mentoring of other coaches. And when I work with them, I don't think I have ever said, "You need to talk more." My feedback is always that silence is your best friend. And you need to make space for that friend as often as you can. By staying silent instead of talking, we let our ego slip below the surface long enough for something new to come out. And it's not always easy. Silence, like humility, can be incredibly uncomfortable. But intentional, just on the edge of awkward silence, is one of the best ways that I know to slow down long enough to check myself and my ego so that I can be fully present for that wonderful free exchange of ideas. Humility also gives us a dose of reality if we pause long enough to ask ourselves, "What's the question I'm afraid to ask? Because I might not like the answer." It's humbling to acknowledge that there are questions we'd rather not even think, let alone speak, because in asking the question, we'd feel compelled to find the answer, and we might not like what we hear. A close relative of humility is attachment, or unattachment, I should say. If we are truly unattached, we are releasing judgments, assumptions, and expectations. And instead of clinging to our stories and our interpretations of what someone else believes or does or says, we take a moment to challenge them. My favorite question that helps me to release attachment to my certainty comes from author Shannon Adler, who wrote, "Most misunderstandings in the world could be avoided if people would simply take the time to ask, what else could this mean?" I love that question. What else could this mean? And there's a funny aside about that quote, because nowadays I always double check the source of a quote to be sure that I'm giving the correct attribution. And if it's someone that I'm not familiar with, I want to know something about them so that I have some context. When I looked up Shannon Adler, I found that she's an author and a therapist. And then I came across this sentence in her about page on her website. She did run Cato University on Parler.com, which had 20,000 followers before it was shut down by big tech in 2020. Some of you might remember Parler.com being in the news. It's the right-wing social media platform that conservatives flock to after Trump got kicked off of Twitter. So right there, in that quote that I love and will continue to share, is a little bit of conflict. Am I going to stop sharing a piece of wisdom because I might have a harsh judgment, one that might be completely true or completely off base about its speaker because of one line and a reference to a right-wing site. If I don't practice what she's talking about, what else could this mean when I read a statement like that in someone's bio or anywhere else, on social media, anywhere? Then I'm refusing to let go of my assumptions and depriving myself and others of a sentiment that could change their lives. Of course, there are times, definitely, when we don't want to amplify the voice of someone who, at the end of the day, is actively harming the world, no matter how brilliant their words are. But if we shut down everyone that we disagree with or who has questionable views, questionable in our minds, we're shutting down the channel that leads to open inquiry. I'd even say that we still need to be curious about those who are actively harming our world so that we can better understand all the dimensions of human nature and use that information to diffuse or de-escalate harm. And baked right into open inquiry is the idea of receptivity. In order to have a free exchange of ideas that we put front and center in that value, we have to be willing to soften our hearts towards another person. And a softer heart doesn't mean a weaker heart. You can be receptive and open without compromising what you hold dear. What you're doing is trusting your truth enough to allow it to be challenged a bit. You might learn something that does change your mind, and that's okay. I think sometimes we're afraid to be open to influence because someone else might prove us wrong. That's threatening to our ego and to our identity. It's what causes people to double down when they're confronted with information that contradicts their deeply held beliefs. We see that playing out all the time. Think of critical race theory. If that's threatening or challenging your beliefs, people are doubling down and saying we have to get rid of it completely instead of actually being curious about it. And this idea of being receptive and open to influence reminds me of something that Kent shared a few earlier in the year, a few weeks ago, about the Big Five personality assessment. You might remember that he shared that one of the aspects of the Big Five, the trait of openness, was found to be most likely associated with people with progressive or liberal leanings. And so if that's you, then you're apt to say that you're open to new experiences, people, places, and ideas. But I do think that there's a difference between being willing to simply entertain and listen to different ideas and being open to being influenced by ideas that might change your way of thinking. We might be open, but we can be just as stubborn and attached to our perspective as anyone else. We can make someone else defend their views rather than share them. If we're really committed to open inquiry, we need to be honest with ourselves about how receptive we are to not just listening to them, but to actively considering views that don't mesh with ours. And finally, an open inquiry mindset is one that places a high value on reciprocity. A phrase that we've heard here a few times in the past couple months, sacred reciprocity, comes to mind. I think of it as what we're really saying when we use the phrase namaste. The sacred in me sees and honors the sacred in you. This is about seeing past our differences into our common humanity and being willing to seek out connection through our sacredness, not our sameness. If when we say free exchange, we mean reciprocity, how are we setting ourselves up for that, personally and as a community? How do we create and hold space for it? In what ways might we be inadvertently discouraging open inquiry? If we discover that there are barriers to open inquiry, are we willing to change to do something about that? I go back to what I shared in the beginning where we were noticing we're very practicing open inquiry spiritually. Are we practicing that politically? And is that one of our barriers personally as a community? Open inquiry is a state of mind. It's 95% our mindset and our attitude, and 5% maybe the actual questions that we ask. And yes, we can always learn to ask better questions, and that's actually a separate talk. And I've got a couple podcast episodes in case anybody's interested in hearing about it. I spend two talking about how to ask better questions. But I hope what I've done here is to invite you into a mindset that enables you to give and receive in more open inquiry and curiosity. And so, of course, in the spirit of inquiry, I'm going to leave you with a few questions. What part of the mindset that I was talking about this morning do you most want to cultivate? Is it mystery, grace, humility, unattachment, receptivity, reciprocity? What person or situation in your life would most benefit from an open inquiry mindset? And what's the question that you're afraid to ask because you might not like the answer? I'm going to close with a verse that's become my theme for 2020. As you listen, listen for the invitation to mystery, humility, and inquiry in the words of Wendell Berry. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work, and that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings. Thank you.